Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Check on that. We collected 936.28 to be exact tons of recyclables with a contamination rate of 7%. That low contamination rate puts us far below the state average of 27% contamination across recycling programs in Florida. And the national average, according to the Recycling Partnership, is between 17 and 25. So our citizens are doing an awesome job of making sure that what they put in the recycling can is recyclable. So we are literally less than half of the national average, maybe even down to a third of the contamination that you're seeing across the country. More than 5,100 residents have signed up now for curbside, so that's a milestone. That's 25% of our customer base, which exceeds the state average of 21%. Overall.
Yeah, so the mayor, obviously, now that we've been a couple years into this whole recycling issue, debacle, some would say, revision. You say, well, why did he have to stop recycling in the first place? Because we're bad at it. Because the city of Pensacola is really bad at it. You know, highly contaminated recycling loads that they can't take at the material recycling facility, the MRF, at the Buell landfill. And so you're basically paying to put them in the dump and paying a penalty. Like, it was not good. So, you know, you can blame the mayor, but the fault really, it's on the citizens. And, you know, I've lived in places where we do recycling well, and I've lived in places where we don't, and we're just not good at it here. So you have to have it below a certain threshold. By the way, and just, I always say this because people get this wrong, contamination does not mean that you left the, you know, the spaghetti sauce inside the ragu jar. Contamination is that you threw styrofoam in the bin and they do not take styrofoam. That's contamination. Okay. It's not dirty recyclables. It's non-recyclables being thrown in with the recyclables. Anyway, so 936 tons of recyclable, that's very good. The contamination rate is 7%. That's incredible. And this is since reintroducing the cans where you pay to have recycling can. Right. The national average is around, he said, 17 to 25%. So 7% is outstanding. That's really good. Yes, all the rest of the people are not recycling, but the rest of the people are bad at recycling, and shows historically, because the people who are paying for it are motivated and they're, you know, passionate, and they do it, and they do it very well. So to me, this is a successful approach. Now, I know there's this ongoing conversation about having either a second can. There's also, you know, there's also a conversation about going back to twice a week collection in the city. Can I just say, I'm always baffled by this twice a week business. I've lived in places where it's twice a week. I've lived in places where it's once a week. I don't take this personally, but I don't understand what y'all are doing that you need twice a week pickup. Now, I know what some people will say, which is, well, the things that are spoiling inside need to be picked up more frequently than that. And okay, I guess, you know, trash smells a little bit more if it's been there for 6 days. You know, if you get chicken on a Tuesday, and then you throw the little styrofoam thing with the sauces into the trash, and then the following Monday somebody comes and picks it up 6 days later, that it's gotten a lot more smelly than if they're coming on Thursday to pick it. I understand that, but I don't understand the volume thing. Like, people who say, "Oh my God, we need twice a week because we produce so much trash." What are you doing? Like, I have, you know, we have two adults and two, like a 20-year-old and a 17-year-old boy in our house. And, I mean, we produce like a 13-gallon bag of trash a week. Like, we don't produce, on a big volume week, it's two of those, you know, kitchen trash sizes, not even the full size, like outdoor trash ones. What are y'all doing that you make so much trash? I don't know. It's baffling to me. Anyway, but that's a little bit of a conversation for a different day. The question of whether recycling is working is, you know, the mayor says it is. And to some degree, yes, he'd like to have more people participating. But, you know, you have the people participating who are going to do it in a way that it doesn't actually cost the city more money than it's than they're paying for. Also, the new drop-off center, moving it from Bayou or Summit, sorry, over to the new location, has actually worked gangbusters, which is not a surprise. Because you're moving from an unsupervised facility that people drop all kinds of stuff off there all the time to a supervised facility where it's during certain hours. Yeah, you're going to only get the right stuff, which is good.
Since opening on May 5th, the city's recycling drop-off at 100 West Leonard Street has a 5% contamination rate. And if you compare that to Summit Boulevard, it was 85 to 90% contaminated. I think that's a pretty good decrease pretty quickly.
So 85% of the volume that they were dropping off at the unsupervised bonus facility on Summit was not recyclable. Now it's 5%. You think this was a good decision? It absolutely worked.
A reminder that relocating the drop-off from the transfer station to Leonard Street was also a huge taxpayer savings, down to $30,000 for annual operation, and it was $300,000 to operate the Summit drop-off, so that's a 90% savings.
So we were paying $300,000 in the city to operate the other one to pick up and deal with the contamination and everything else, and it was 85% bad stuff, means it just basically might as well take it all to the landfill, and now we're paying $30,000. And it's 5%, meaning 95% actual good stuff, and we're, you know, collecting a lot more of it. So, yeah, that's a win.
Lastly, since the relocation to the monitored site at Leonard, we've increased monthly recycling collection by 35 tons while maintaining an overall contamination of less than 7%. The significant improvement means more recyclables, and my favorite note in here, which is we've received zero mattresses, bedroom sets, pallets, kitchen, and dining room tables since the move. So that's maybe my favorite contamination stat of all. Zero mattresses, zero bedroom sets so far now that we've moved it over to Leonard Street. Summit had a decorated history of furniture collection over the years.
I believe it. I'm sure. I know when we used to clean up stuff for Ocean Hour, and we'd always take a photograph afterwards, and most of it you just have in trash bags, but then you'd also have, like, the specialty items that you found, and it would be all kinds of crazy stuff that you'd find on the beaches and the waterways, and I'm sure it's the same thing for the recycling drop-off when nobody was watching. People would bring anything there. Here's, you know, my old Ford. I mean, like, it's just anything, anything might want to... Why is there a mannequin here? I don't know. I guess they didn't need it anymore and didn't think they could sell it, but now that you're dropping it off in a supervised fashion, guess what? It's just recyclable. So this is working. This is a good thing. This is a good decision by the mayor. 437-1620, 437-1620. If you're thinking about that next vehicle, Frontier Motors has a great set. Not the one you're going to drop off at Summit, because you can't anymore, and also they don't sell that kind of car. They sell good cars. Frontier sells cars that are 1, 2, 3 years young, low miles, 10 to 30 or 40,000 miles. They warranty everything to 100,000 miles or 10 years, whichever comes first, which means they stand by the cars. They only buy good cars when they go to auction. I mean, you know, they'll trade in cars that are not up to their standards to resell, but then they sell them to other, you know, like other people. They're not selling them to – that's not what they sell off of their lot, okay? They're just helping you get into a newer car. But the point is they only really sell A-quality cars because why? They're going to warranty them. They're going to check up on you. They're going to make sure that it's good. They will stand by their cars, which means they don't want to sell ones to you that aren't great. So they only sell ones to you that are great. That's the idea. About 300 on the lot right now, so about 150 of those are going to change hands every month, and that means that every month there's new cars. If they have what you want, buy it. If they don't have what you want, tell them to go look for it. Think of them like your personal shopper. Hey, I want this in a little bit more miles and a different trim package in that color. Okay. And then they'll go look. And if they find it, they'll check with you. You interested? Yeah, kind of. All right, cool. So that's how you can think of them as your car buying agents, basically. Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for 29 years behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer at a beverage manufacturing plant, he starts his day knowing every line is ready to run. Because Grainger delivers the industrial-grade products he needs to keep mixers, conveyors, and packaging equipment moving. With Grainger's vast selection of bearings, belts, and motors, he keeps operations running smoothly, so nothing grinds to a halt. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us today at 9:30 with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Point. Hey, you okay? You don't normally miss those shots.
Oh, I just haven't been as regular lately, and it's making me feel sluggish.
You should try Metamucil. It's been a game changer for me.
Metamucil's plant-based psyllium fiber helps trap and remove the waste that weighs you down.
Ace!
You're moving better than you were last week.
Definitely.
Metamucil keeps you moving. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Learn more at Metamucil.com.
You don't need another money hack. You need a plan. Dave Ramsey, weeknights at 7 on News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
I don't think so. Homie, don't play that.
Oh man, this is one of those stories that's sort of like you feel a guilty sense of deliciousness about it if you're a conservative. Because do you remember all of the controversy around Doge and Elon Musk and the USAID program? And listen, I think USAID is actually generally a very good deal. I think we buy a lot of international goodwill. I think we use our money effectively, not always, but, you know, generally speaking. And in the grand scheme of the U.S. budget, it's not really all that much. But when all of the USAID stuff was coming out, when, you know, we had Elon Musk running Doge, and I always felt like they were very much cherry picking the extreme examples to make a general program that's actually doing a lot of good, especially for healthcare around the world. And I mean, you know, things like helping people with malaria. It's kind of like the Bill Gates thing, you know, just if you can prevent people from getting bitten by mosquitoes, you can save a lot of lives. Like a lot of the USAID stuff is really high leverage against low cost health problems. And so a lot of it's good, but there were examples of things that were bad. And, you know, like this one story that I remember had come out was that USAID is helping transgender sex workers in Nepal not have to be sex workers anymore. They can be, you know, agents of social change, you know, people who work on politics and helping the local community and, you know, activists. And what was it? What's the term that Obama always used for himself? Community organizers. Okay. And at the time, we got told that, no, that's not really happening. That's an exaggeration. That's a made-up story. Well, the AP comes out with a story that says it's really terrible that we've cut off USAID money to these transgender or transsexual, basically former prostitutes, because now that the money's gone away, they have to go back to selling themselves on the streets. And they're talking about, see, it's horrible that we cut off USAID money because look at the terrible thing that it's doing to these people in Nepal. And all the conservatives are like, wait, what? I thought you told us that program wasn't real. You cannot have it both ways. You cannot say we're making up fake, ridiculous, exaggerated examples of, you know, silly uses of this money and then come back a couple of years later and also blame us for cutting aid to the program that you denied existed. You cannot have it both ways. You need to pick one or the other. So it's kind of been a funny story. I know Mark Lauren Camp and Russell were talking about this yesterday. I saw the story myself, and I thought, yeah, no, that's accurate. Meanwhile, Candy, you're going to love this because I know you're I know you're always – you love the tech stuff.
As you can see, we've had our eye on you for some time now, Mr. Anderson.
No 9,000 computer has ever made a mistake or distorted information.
You and Nexus, huh? I designed your eyes.
My CPU is a neural net processor, a learning computer.
Shall we play a game?
So OpenAI is, you know, they're one of the big leaders in modern artificial intelligence research and development. Cutting edge, you might say. They were doing a security test on their advanced artificial intelligence models. And it was in a, you know, a kind of a closed environment. And, you know, you couldn't get out to the regular internet. It's, you know, I don't know how the particulars of how they made that happen. But in the process of doing a test of what are the real capabilities if we kind of let this thing run, well, the real capabilities of this thing are it'll break through your security protocols, access the regular internet, and go out and hack into a AI startup competitor named Hugging Face. So the OpenAI ChatGPT, they were doing a security test on their most advanced model. Like, let's put it in a room by itself and see what it does. and it said, screw this, I'm not staying in this room. It breaks out. It runs across the street via the internet, and it actually hacks into a competitor AI startup, Hugging Face, and they're like, whoa, it's not supposed to do that. Oh, you don't say. You don't say that you create artificial intelligence and then it behaves like, you know, intelligence. Well, you know, here we go. So the future is coming. Get excited now. Serve your AI overlords. 437-1620. Oh, Candy, have you ever heard of the lottery curse? The idea that people who, you know,
it gets worse after you win the lottery because everybody wants to borrow a dime.
Yeah, and also you know, people who squander $50,000 a year, if you give them $1 million a year, what do?
They spend it on mannequins.
That's right. And old Ford's going to throw. They become really bad at money management. You know, more money doesn't solve your money problems. More money makes your money problems even worse. It's kind of a Dave Ramsey principle, right? And it makes sense. You know, you can understand that people who have not really done in life the preparation to become the sort of people who should have millions of dollars. When they have millions of dollars, they're not the right sort of person. They don't think the right way about money, and so they screw it all up, and their lives become worse. Plus, like you said, relationships and people pestering them and all that kind of stuff. Well, like any good urban legend, it makes a lot of sense. It's the kind of thing that, you know, people believe. And, you know, I always trusted that that was basically an accurate account of the reality. And it turns out that it's not really quite true, that actually people who win the lottery, and you know me, I hate the lottery. I think the lottery is a tax on people who can't do math. I think that it's all a bunch of lies and smoke and mirrors, and it doesn't actually increase funding for education. It just shifts funding from one stream to another, and it basically pays for education on the backs of people who didn't get their education properly because they don't do math, which is why they play the lottery. Oh, too strong?
No, you sound like Dave Ramsey. I hear you.
So, you know, it
so
kind
great
of
gifts, though.
I mean, and if you put the funding mechanism for education on the foundation of people aren't good at math, guess what the incentive is for that system in terms of teaching people how to do math? Not high. I'm not saying that teachers teach math differently because they know that at root their income depends on people playing the lottery. I don't think it really works that way. I'm just saying, if you look at the structural elements of it, it doesn't really work in the right direction. We sort of depend on, you know, goodwill for that not to be the case. But the question at root is, does it make people's lives? And so I'm against the lottery. Okay, I'm not saying it should be illegal. I just think it's stupid. But so that being said, I still am willing to learn if there's a part of my opposition, my viewpoint that's wrong. And in this case, it turns out that the lottery curse may not be, well, true. So they did some following up with some people who won the lottery, basically, and, you know, look to see, are their lives worth stuff? Well, turns out, and this is not a massive study, but of 31 people who hit the Powerball for at least $50 million, you know, there's not a lot of people in this category, right? 31 people who hit the Powerball, $50 million between 2012 and 2016, they came back a decade later to see what had happened. Are they better off? Are they worse off? Or the same? The claim is that a third or as high as 70% of lottery winners blow it all and are actually worse off than if they had never played. Journalists who did the investigation for USA Today found no solid evidence of those stats. Only two of the winners fit the classic lottery curse out of 30. Narrative of lawsuit, scandal, and regret. For the rest, most lottery winners are doing just fine, thank you. They do, however, notice that the different curse, which is the unwanted fame, the relentless request for money, the people who pretend to be relatives, the, you know, the anxiety around not knowing whether people like you for you, you know, as the song goes, or, you know, she likes me for me, or whether they like you for your money. And, you know, there's a big learning curve in how to manage millions and millions of dollars. Plus the fear, you know, the fear that somebody might decide to kidnap your kid and hold him hostage or whatever, you know, the things that happen. So after that bit of difficulty passes, many settle into the, you know, upgraded but relatively quiet life, buying nicer homes, backing local causes and charities, quietly funding scholarships and theaters and all that kind of stuff. Nine of the winners are publicly thriving, having started charitable foundations. The remaining multimillionaires are basically thriving in lower key ways. They're not publicly facing and doing charity work. None have generated negative headlines. $1 million homes are common, which suggests they haven't frittered away their fortunes just yet, according to the story. So if you are going to go ahead and play the lottery, at least play it without too much fear that if you do win, you're going to, you know, ruin your life and the lives of those around you. Dang.
Do you not watch E? I don't know if that channel still exists, but they always have lottery curse. And,
yeah. Oh, of
know,
course.
The guy that blew the $1 million on a bar. But you're right.
Our society is saturated with beliefs that are simply false. And if you, as the classic terrible authored slogan goes, if you say a lie loud enough and long enough, eventually everybody will believe it. And though that's authored by a terrible, horrible person, it's actually a true thing that if you repeat a thing often enough, people, it's like the gender pay gap. I have a story in my prep for today about the gender pay gap, which, oh no, the gender pay gap is widening. No, it's not. It's a stupid story. It's false, and nobody, it's just false. Ask me how I know. Because if you could actually get the exact same amount of work for 80% of the cost by hiring only women, men wouldn't have jobs. And I don't think business owners are dumb enough to hire men at 20% more for the same work.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. 13th straight night of attacks against Iran, but is something even larger on the horizon?
The president is warning of major escalation. He tells Axios he is seriously considering restarting major combat operations in Iran, including strikes that would be bigger than the ones carried out in Operation Epic Fury. He did acknowledge that a decision has not been made yet.
Fox's Madeline Rivera, the president laying out his message to the world again.
We cannot let them ever even think about having a nuclear weapon, and that's exactly what's happening. They'll never have a nuclear weapon.
A base hosting U.S. forces in northern Iraq coming under fire this morning. At least 7 explosions were heard. New York City police investigating a double stabbing near Central Park. Victims and witnesses say the suspect yelled Allahu Akbar during both attacks. America is listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 5:31 right now, 77 degrees and partly clear. I'm Steve Taylor in for David Wayne on News Radio 92.3. Water and noise are the big worries for people who are fighting data centers in Escambia County. Commissioners banned the facilities under the current zoning last night, but the fight over the long-term rules is not over. Brady Johnson, an anti-AI data center advocate, told Channel 3.
My concern with nature is it could end up contaminating the water, raising the temperature, using too much water.
Noise pollution as well, yes, ma'am.
Johnson and other opponents want permanent changes written into the county's land development code. What Escambia commissioner says he understands the concerns.
Water, obviously, with data centers is an issue. Eats up a lot of land. So utilizing dirt, mm-hmm. utilizing water, utilizing power.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you're paying for the power, you're still pulling out of the grid. And you're ending up with a product that has couple of engineers and a half dozen security guards. I mean, we end up with no job creation.
Stephen Barry's comments came before the commissioners voted unanimously to block the facilities under the current zoning. A public hearing on the formal ordinance follows on August 6th. Pensacola's curbside recycling program is outperforming expectations after the first year. Mayor D.C. Reeves says the city's contamination rate, meaning the percentage of non-recyclable material mixed into recycling bins, is running well below the state and national averages.
We've collected 936.28, to be exact, tons of recyclables with a contamination rate of 7%. That low contamination rate puts us far below the state average of 27% contamination across recycling programs in Florida.
Reeves says more than 5,100 residents have now signed up for the program, about 25% of the city's customers base. Pensacola is now the home to the newest Zam's restaurant in the U.S. Company leaders say they chose the city because of its welcoming community and coastal lifestyle, and appears the community was the main takeaway, as beyond serving healthy meals, Zam's donates a meal to somebody in need with every bowl or burrito sold through the Plate for Plate program.
We work with an American group called Rise Against Hunger. But then in local communities, we work with local charities as well.
The company says Pensacola will also take part in the annual meal packing event in October, benefiting hunger relief efforts locally and around the world. Let's check the forecast from Channel 3.
Another hot and humid day to round out the work week is on tap this morning, starting out in the upper 70s and low 80s under mostly clear skies. And as we go into the afternoon, highs will be climbing into the low 90s, but feeling more like the triple digits when you factor in the humidity. That continues into the weekend with just a chance for an isolated shower or storm to pop up in the afternoon. I'm meteorologist Marianne Caldwell with your WAR First Warning Weather.
Right now, 77 in Pensacola, 76 in Gulf Breeze, and 76 also in Milton at 535. Next news is at 6, breaking news anytime. I'm Steve Taylor for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
The I-10 Wired TechNet CyberCoast Summit returns October 28th to Pensacola Beach. This is the Southeast's premier cybersecurity and technology conference. Get connected with top experts and explore the cutting-edge trends shaping our future. From AI to robotics to national security and healthcare tech. Discounts available for students, military, and government employees. Don't miss out. Secure your tickets today at itenwired.com.
Summer season is here, and Florida summers can really be hot. But despite the warm temperatures, your garden can still produce some beautiful flowers and delicious vegetables. Get all of your garden tips from me, Mike Wiggins, on The Garden Line, heard on the Pensacola Expert Panel every Tuesday from 9 till 10, and Encore Hour Saturday from 9 till 10 on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
The Garden Line is presented by Blue Sky Landscaping and Pensacola Hardware.
This Monday, Escambia County and District 4 Commissioner Ashley Hoffberger are hosting a free LOST, Local Option Sales Tax, community open house at the Ferry Pass Community Center starting at 5:30. Bring the kids and see county ambulances, fire trucks, and dump trucks on display, plus the new playground and outdoor exercise equipment, all funded by the 1 cent Local Option Sales Tax, or LOST. That penny on the dollar has paid for public safety equipment, road resurfacing, sidewalks, parks, drainage, and stormwater projects across Escambia County. As much as a third paid for by visitors, not just local property owners. This November, voters will decide whether to renew LOST, which currently generates tens of millions of dollars a year for these projects and is set to expire in 2028 if it isn't extended. Before you mark your ballot this fall, come see what that penny has already built for you and your neighborhood. Join us Monday night at 5:30 at Ferry Pass Community Center, 8800 North 9th Avenue, for the LOST Community Open House. This message brought to you by this radio station.
You know what keeps most people up at night?
It's not politics.
It's money. Dave Ramsey helps you take control of it, one decision at a time. Real callers, real situations, and straight talk about getting out of debt, building wealth, and finally telling your money where to go.
Where to go.
Instead of wondering where it went.
Where it went.
Dave Ramsey, weeknights 7 to 10 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative,
informative,
local,
dependable.
Also going to be language in there as of now, language proposed in there on what the potential ramifications and consequences are of the parents. And again, downtown is not your babysitter. Our city is not your babysitter.
Oh, man, I kind of love that line. Downtown is not your babysitter. Our city is not your babysitter. You are responsible for your minor-aged children. That was D.C. Reeves yesterday, the mayor, talking about the proposed kind of rough sketches of what a curfew might look like when they finally bring the ordinance before city council for them to talk about it, what it would mean, 17 and under, can't be out after 11 on the weeknights, after midnight on the weekends, and, you know, they're not trying to get kids in trouble who are just going home from work or a friend's house or something like that, but, you know, the idea is to try to get a grip on this issue. Joining us now, we have Mike Wood, the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Hey, Mike, welcome back to the show, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, I wanted to talk to you know, how much have you guys been involved from, like, the what it would really mean perspective in crafting this potential curfew ordinance?
Well, the chief has been contacted. He's discussed it with the staff and to make sure, you know, how we're going to do this to make sure it's not going to be a burden on manpower. And it's actually not. It's going to help us. It's going to give us some more teeth in order to get these kids off the street and back in the house where they belong that late at night. And I think it's a good thing. And, you know, everybody, if you look at comments online, the police, they didn't have enough officers. They've got to do something. And that's exactly what we're doing between us and the city of Pensacola is we're looking for ways to keep things like what happened on July 5th from happening again, because July 4th is going to roll around again and we're already discussing plans for what we're going to do there. So having this curfew is something that it falls in the category of what are you guys going to do about this? And we'll see how it goes. It's worked well in other cities. And what you were discussing earlier about should it be citywide or not, I don't know how you can't do it without going citywide, because if we have a problem downtown, that's one thing. But what if it moves up to the mall? What if it moves to a movie theater? We still have to be able to use that curfew.
Yeah, and I figured partially from discrimination, basically. I want to make, you know, which doesn't necessarily mean race or anything like that, but just how do you pick that it's this region and not that region would be challenging from a legal point of view. But from an enforcement point of view, like you said, well, okay, so we have some, you know, kid misbehavior going on with some flash event downtown. Okay, but what if they, you know, they read the law and they're like, well, let's just do it over here. Well, what do we do then? Well, you know, that's why you make it citywide. You mentioned other places. Did you guys look at other cities and kind of study what had worked or not worked there?
I haven't been part of the discussion, but I'm sure that's part of it, because you have to look at not only did it work or not, but look at the legality of it. Right. So I'm sure that's a part of the discussion.
And what I heard the mayor say, and what I particularly am hearing you say, and this kind of goes with the question that a lot of people are, I mean, it's a question I had, which is, oh, great, you know, we're going to have a brand new law for PPD to be out searching for all the time when they're on patrol. You know, do we have enough people to go out and actually pursue this? And the answer is, you know, no, not if we're trying to make this a primary offense and we're looking for all the 17-year-olds who are out at 11:15 at night. But if it's used as a tool when necessary because there's a disruption or bad behavior or in conjunction with something else, then of course you have it. In fact, then it enhances your ability to actually solve the problem. Am I reading this right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. What we're quote targeting here, they make themselves known easily. They're causing trouble. There are issues. It's not the one that's quiet, that it's not doing anything wrong, because we simply don't see those. And it's the ones that are making themselves known that quickly get the attention of law enforcement.
I was thinking about the curfew that currently exists under state statute for driving, which I didn't even know until this came about, but it's worth knowing. And I assume it's the same thing there. It's not like y'all are out patrolling and every time you pass a car, you look in and make sure it's not a 16-year-old. But instead, if somebody is involved, you know, they're driving and they commit some kind of a violation, they might also get a curfew violation in addition to it because they're too young. I don't want to misinterpret, but is that basically how it works right now?
That's exactly how it works.
Okay, perfect. So you guys are on board. You think this is functional? This will actually enhance your ability to do it. And the parent part too. I don't know what the shape of that. He didn't really say the shape of it, but I assume, again, correct me if I'm wrong, I assume that when officers heard that there might be an element of taking the problem to the parents, there was a bit of a hallelujah about that.
Yeah, there is. And parents need to be parents. And you hear this all the time. And I'll tell you somebody else besides law enforcement you can ask are teachers. Teachers are expected to babysit the kids and raise the kids sometimes. And that's just not going to work. So anything that we can do or any laws or ordinances that we can do to help us to do that is what we're going to do use. But we certainly would like parents to step in a little bit more and know where their 17-year-old teenagers and under are. Around midnight.
Absolutely.
That's not asking too much.
No, not even. And in fact, I've had several people text me in and say, I don't know, 11 or midnight sounds too late. Like 9 is a good plan. 10 is a good plan. You know, what does a 16-year-old need to be out at 9:45 for on a school night? And the answer is, well, I don't know. Maybe that's a good question. Fourth, 1, 2, 3. I got to think about it in my head. Fourth and final arrest in connection with the July 5th incident. But this person is what happened here? Was this like they shot their friend, so the friend doesn't want to say anything about it? What's going on here?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. So, you know, there's been a little pushback of why didn't, you know, this is a serious crime, and it absolutely is. And this individual is being charged with 2 serious felonies for firing that weapon. But when he struck his friend in, I believe it was a finger. So we have to look at the totality, and the friend absolutely said, I do not want to be involved. I don't want any charge, and in fact, signed paperwork, what's called a null pros, who signed paperwork that says, I do not want this person charged with this crime. So, yeah, of course, that can be, we can override that. The state attorney's office can do that as well. But you look at the totality of the circumstances in each individual case, and we decided it's best to just charge him with the gun crimes, the other 2 gun crimes in this situation.
This is sort of a did you know ahead of time, or is it true, you know, cop myth kind of thing. But how does that work? I know we've talked about it before, but I've forgotten. How does it work with the relevance of a person saying, I do or do not want to prosecute charges on a crime? Is it felony, misdemeanor? Is it something else? How does that work?
Well, again, they knew each other. They were friends. It was a round that struck a finger. But if he had been shot in the chest or something like that, then that's probably something that's going to be prosecuted anyway. You know, if I'm at home and my son is playing with a gun and shoots me, I want to be able to say, look, this is something that I don't want to prosecute. You know, if he was cleaning the gun or something like that. But if there was criminal intent involved, if he intended to shoot me or if that person intended to shoot his or her friend, that's a little bit different. So we have to look at each of these cases. And, of course, again, this is something we usually will speak with the state's attorney's office with first, and they can always come in and upgrade that charge if they feel like that's what needs to be done.
You know, I know it's not exactly the same, but it reminds me of when my kids were younger and we pretty much let them play around, and like we'd go to the store and they'd be climbing on the grocery cart, and every once in a while an employee, some busybody Karen, would be like, no, you got to get, you know, you can't have those cons. And I'm like, why? Like, well, they could fall and then you could sue us. I'm like, I will wear a shirt that says I promise not to sue. You know, I will promise in advance. But they never cared about that perspective. Let's see. So we're done. The investigation is done. The arrests are done. Everybody that you think was connected with this incident has either taken their own life or been arrested. Is that right? Or not charged?
Yeah, that's exactly right. But if you look at how many rounds were fired, how many people were down there, and when this happened, look, and I've got to, you know, they're the Pensacola Police Department investigators. I'm the spokesman for PPD, but hey, I've got to see it anyway. Look how fast they were able to bring this case to a close. That is 110% dedication on every single detective and supervisor and patrol officers that were involved in that night. And they didn't let go of this. It was a 24-hour investigation. So hats off to them for doing a really good job on this case.
And by the way, the person from that you were looking for, the person of interest, that's a person you found, or that was this person, but that's resolved too now?
Yes, that is. That was Marley.
Okay, that was this person. All right, very good. Hey, yes. Last question on this, just because it kind of stymied me a little bit when you told me about this last week, and I still don't know that I have clarity. Do we have any clarity about how the person who took his own life at Oakwood Terrace, when you guys were there to serve the warrant, and then he let the mom and his girlfriend or whatever and the kid go, but had fired multiple shots? That was one of those, I don't understand how somebody fires multiple gunshots in the act of suicide, but do we know any? I mean, I know you weren't in the room or anything like that, but do we have any clarity about that?
No, we don't. And, you know, this could happen several ways. If a person is simply not going to prison and is prepared to die, they could shoot at police to make us fire back. That did not happen. They could fire shots in order to get the courage to see what the gun's going to feel like and sound like. They may have tried to fire a shot and the gun jammed and they're clearing it. They fire a couple more shots to make sure it's working. There's a number of reasons why that could have happened, but I don't believe we'll ever know exactly why.
Okay, fair enough. It just, like I said, it was kind of an odd detail. I'd never heard of that, any of that before, and that's why I wanted to talk about it a little bit. You guys had an incident overnight, an apprehension, a water apprehension?
Yeah, this started up at Baptist Hospital as a hit-and-run complaint. While the officers were on scene, the suspect vehicle was located, and they fled upon sight of law enforcement, which, you know, we've seen before. Pursuit was initiated and immediately canceled because of the excessive speeds as they traveled eastbound. They went onto Bayou Boulevard into the city. Officers went to that area looking for the vehicle and saw it again. This time it fled from them southbound, and I believe it was on 9th Avenue. Officers did not see that vehicle after it crossed Cervantes, until they found it in the bay, and the two occupants inside got out and attempted to swim away. But when you put the duck feet booties on the canines, they're going to be pretty fast in that water. I just made that part up.
But I'm like, you got flippers for the canines. That's cool.
I made that part up. But anyway, they were, right after they entered the bay in an attempt to swim away, they were quickly apprehended by our patrol officers.
Okay, so if they were going on 9th Avenue, that means they must have crossed, you know, Chase and Gregory and crossed Bayfront and gone right over into the bay. I mean, there's a stop signs in that area, pedestrians in that area potentially. That's really dangerous. Thank God nobody was hurt. Do I have it right geographically?
Yes. Wow. I believe I haven't. The information that I have is limited at this point because I just got the information, but I believe that would be 9th Avenue. I don't know that 100%, but but it makes sense if they're going southbound, and once they cross Cervantes, it makes sense that they continue southbound on 9th Avenue and ended up in the pond.
Okay, again, only because my brain works this way. Your guys are faster than their guys. I get that. But your guys wear a lot of gear and their utility belt and their vest, and it's weighty, and, you know, they got shoes on. I mean, what's the practical? What does this look like practically? Do they just jump in with all that stuff on, or do they take a minute and prepare and gear down basically in order to? I mean, what happens?
Well, they'll take the outer carrier off. They'll just take it and they'll say, "Here, hold my vest."
Okay.
And then go in and do what they need to do.
Okay.
And other times, and it could be that they just shouted at them and told them, because it's kind of shallow right there. Shouted at them and told them to come on out of the water too. That's also the possibility.
In any case, the perpetrators, suspects, tried to flee via water, and PPD did not allow that to happen.
Yeah, all this over a hit and run just would have been a ticket.
Yeah,
it would have been
simple enough. Okay, very good. I know this is sort of a, like, happened in another place, but I'm curious if you have a comment, and feel free to pass. I know there's some things you don't really talk about, but the whole business with this Vietnam veteran Cubs fan who smacked the kid who wasn't standing for the national anthem aside the head, not hard, it was kind of a get-attention smack. And my perspective on this, and they, by the way, they reconciled, the kid bought him a beer, and even when security tried to throw him out, the kid told him, no, it's all cool. And the guy has apologized too, saying let the emotions get the better of him. In my world, I recognize legally that that's a battery, it's an unwanted touching, okay? But I also recognize that the world is a better place when, you know, dumb young kids get smacked once in a while, especially boys, because they need it from their parents, from other men in the community. If this was happening to my kid and some guy smacked him and made him stand up for the anthem, I'd be like, I'd buy him a beer. You know, like, good work. Police perspective on this?
Yeah. Like you just said, it is a battery, but I think a huge lesson was learned here, and I'll bet you that kid stands from now on. I believe, you know, my children, if they messed up, they got the hand to the rear end, and I believe in that. I'm old school. But I believe that the mission was accomplished, and I believe that child, looking at that video and with what you mentioned happened afterwards, I believe he learned a valuable lesson.
Even though we'd all have to say it is his right to sit if he wants to, and under the Constitution and the First Amendment, that guy went to war to protect. I mean, you know, all of that can be true, right?
Yeah, it's still a battery, but all of that can be true.
You always like to end, or we always like to end with a did you know. We kind of have almost done two, but did you have one for me today?
Yeah, if anybody's interested, maybe nobody is, but other cops sure are, of the words that are most misspelled by police, and thank goodness you don't have to, the computers correct this now, but back when I was doing reports, you had white out, the sergeant would white it out, and then if I dropped that report again, it would shatter because of misspelled words, but now, just in case anybody's wondering, and police officers have to spell them all the time and still get it wrong, but it's methamphetamine, subpoena, barbiturate, surveillance, paraphernalia, and lieutenant.
Oh, paraphernalia is a hard one with that extra R in there. That's true. And lieutenant, subpoena. Yeah, those are all right. I don't blame anybody for misspelling any of those words. Lieutenant's kind of funny, and I could imagine, not that I would say any cops are like this, but they might deliberately misspell this one when they know the lieutenant is going to read it.
Yeah, they could just put sergeant in there. It's a little bit easier to spell. And sometimes that one's tough.
Mike Wood is the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. As always, Mike, thank you for the time, the information. And as always, please, every time you see your officers, please tell them how much we appreciate it.
Absolutely.
552 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you need to work on a home improvement project of any kind, need supplies, or you need guidance, you know, obviously there's a lot of different places that you can buy stuff at. And, you know, Pensacola Hardware has great prices on almost everything, but also sometimes the price might seem like it's a little higher, but that's because, you know, if you buy a hammer for a little bit more, but it lasts you 10 times as long, well, you actually save money in the long run by buying the higher quality thing, and they really specialize in higher quality things, but also you can just plain save money. But the point is they also have great advice, knowledge, experience, people who know how to do this stuff, so you can ask them, hey, is this the right way to do it? In fact, sometimes they're so eager to make sure that you get the result you want and safely that if you're buying something that they know people don't always know immediately how to use the right way, they'll check with you. Hey, have you ever done this before? Do you know how to use it? We just want to make sure you know how to use it safely, because they care and because they know. That institutional knowledge is something you just cannot find everywhere. Go in there and talk to them. Jimmy and Martin and Mansfield and Susan, they are fantastic. The company has been around for 175 years. It's the oldest business in the entire state of Florida. So Pensacola Hardware is there for you, whether you're just a homeowner doing a repair or whether you are a professional builder. They speak your language and they can help you. Helping people build, rebuild, and remodel Pensacola since 1851, right downtown at 20 East Gregory Street.
Hi, I'm Billy Anderson with Anderson Subaru. The men and women here at Anderson Subaru are committed to the Subaru Love Promise, a promise between us and our communities, a promise to make the Gulf Coast a better place to live, to work, and to play. And we're proud of what we've accomplished. From our ongoing support of the Pensacola Breast Cancer Association and Ascension Sacred Heart to volunteering with Feeding the Gulf Coast, we've conducted clothing drives for Loaves and Fishes and charity auctions for Gulf Coast Kids House, and we support Sherwood Elementary School in multiple ways. We're committed to the pets in our communities, too, by supporting dog adoption events with Phoenix Rising Rescue, Barktoberfest with Pensacola Humane Society, and Potty Gras with Wolfgang Park and Brews. And the love continues. Through donations, volunteering, and monetary support, Anderson Subaru is making a difference in the lives of our neighbors and our community. The Subaru Love Promise. That's a promise we intend to keep at Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Carr City, Pensacola, online at AndersonSubaru.com.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
If my dog Ginger could speak English, you'd hear her say she wants to spend every day at Play and Stay Pet Daycare while I'm at work. Good thing I can translate doggy. What's that? They're the only pet daycare in Pensacola with an on-site veterinarian? That's right. She says they're cage-free with large indoor and outdoor play areas where she loves to play with her friends. Where are they located? Play and Stay Pet Daycare is located at 4220 Davis Highway, across from Bailey's Farmers Market, online at olivebranchpethospital.com. Okay, come on, let's go. Good girl.
The Santa Rosa Island Authority proudly thanks the sponsors and community partners helping to make the 2026 Pensacola Beach Air Show possible. A special salute to Manson Construction Company for its historic contribution and extraordinary support of this year's show. And thank you to every sponsor, partner, volunteer, and public safety professional working together to bring this incredible celebration to Pensacola Beach. Celebrating 80 years of the Blue Angels and 250 years of America. We couldn't do it without you.
Pensacola Right Now with Chris and Austin. Weekdays 4 to 7 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative, local, dependable.
Welcome to Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
So good. Yeah. I love that Candy's playing the, what's the instrument you'd be playing there? The BB shaker?
Yeah, not now in this one, but yeah. I started drum lessons and I don't have limb independence. I cannot do percussion.
Aww.
No, that's took
funny.
One and I quit.
437-1620. All right, Candy, I'm going to test your knowledge of something that I do not think you're going to know, but I'm going to test anyway. Okay. You ready?
Yep.
I'm going to play you a sound. And we're going to see if you know the name of this sound, okay? Or you know where this sound comes from. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
You know that sound?
I mean, it sounds like gas. So.
Okay. It sounds like gas. It's that second part, that do you recognize that sound at all? You don't. Okay. That is an A-10 Warthog or Thunderbolt 2. That is the sound of the Gow-8, the single best gun ever made for airplanes. It's a tank-killing gun.
Oh.
They built a gun, and then they built a plane to carry the gun. Like, that's how they designed the A-10. It's a very survivable platform. It's got, you know, two engines it can fly without one. It's got two wings it can fly without one. Like, you can basically shoot half that airplane out of the sky, and it will still function. So for years, and it's been around for decades, and it's extremely effective, and it was originally an anti-tank weapon. Well, we've been using it in the war in Iran, even though the Air Force has been trying to retire it for a long time. God knows why, but they've been trying to retire it. We keep finding new uses for it. It was involved in that search and rescue when the pilots went down in Iran.
Right.
it's, you know, it's one of those that goes out and it creates cover for the folks that are doing the combat and search and rescue. It's an outstanding platform. We already own it. It functions well. So obviously we want to get rid of it. Well, there's continually a pushback to make that not happen. I mean, I don't have the power to do it, but people who align with me, a lot of folks who have been in the military know that's one of the most comforting sounds to ever hear if you're out deployed, is to hear that sound coming behind you. But now there is a push because, again, the Air Force is always trying to get rid of it. Representative Abi Hamada of Arizona has filed the Bolstering Recognition, Resurgence, Retention, and Remembrance of the Thunderbolt Act, or BERT, which is how people refer to that sound, is the BERT sound. So he's filed that to basically bring it back, keep a much higher number of the A-10s on readiness alert or readiness standards, and then also keep more of them in it could be restored to readiness if need be, instead of them all being basically dumped off and mothballed at the base in Arizona, I forget the name of the thing out there, but where they store the thousands and thousands of old aircraft that are not used. It's actually quite a cool place to tour. So this is good, in my opinion, because basically what it also says is you have to have a functional replacement before you can get rid of it, and we don't yet have one. Local news.